They take a cab to wherever they're going, and it's almost ridiculous how normal it feels. Supervillains take cabs. Who knew? Tony spends a minute fiddling with her phone to make sure Jarvis makes sure there are blind spots wherever they go. Because, why, yes, Jarvis is hacked into traffic cameras too. Why do you ask? In Tony's defense, he sort of did that one himself, when he decided she needed to be supervised at all times. In no way is she responsible for her super-intelligent AI hacking his way into every computer system in the Northern Hemisphere he can get a hold of, just because he's a bit insanely devoted to her. "Who's the wizard behind the curtain?" she asks, once she's done making sure she'll still be an Avenger when she gets back to the tower. "He is far worse than that," Loki answers, making a motion toward the driver. The plexiglass between the front and back rows flashes green briefly. Tony assumes it's supposed to prevent eavesdropping. Her eyebrows hit her hairline for a different reason, though. "You've read The Wizard of Oz, but not the Twilight series? Who does your book recs, woman?" "I did not read that book," Loki says, and then sort of grimaces.
"Oh my god!"
Tony calls, a bit too loud for the confined space. "You watched the movie? I didn't even know you knew how to operate a TV! Oh, this is hilarious. The god of mischief watches children's classics in her free time." "I know perfectly well how to use Earth technology."
"Yeah, if you can point your staff at it and fry it."
"I could point my staff at you," the god suggests, dryly and at least half serious. Tony does the eyebrow tango.
"Dirty,"
she sings, tongue behind her teeth. Loki rolls her big green eyes. "You are utterly ridiculous."
"Your face is ridiculous."
"Do you want to die?"
"I told you, I'd ruin your manicure."
"I could live with that if it meant getting rid of your inane chatter."
"Aw, you like it."
"I do not."
"Yes, you do, because I can keep up with you."
"You have a high opinion of yourself."
"Why does everyone say that like it's a bad thing?"
"Because it will get you killed."
And we're back at the staff metaphor. Baby, you can aim your staff at me anytime. Although, I don't think you have it right now. Do you carry it in your purse?
Tony doesn't bother elaborating which staff she's talking about. Thank you very much. It's not the one Loki has been carrying the few times he's been sighted since he came back to Earth after his community service in Asgard. "Are you aware that you are sexually propositioning your arch-enemy?"
"Arch-smarch. Now who has a high opinion of themselves?"
"I don't want to say his name." Loki suddenly derails, and Tony almost gets whiplash, but catches up.
"Why?"
If looks could speak, this one would write a novel on how incompetent Tony is. "Names have power, Stark."
"So do guns,"
Tony points out, reasonably.
"Still like to play with them, though."
With a sudden movement, Loki grabs Tony's wrist, wrenching it toward her. For a moment, Tony thinks the god is going to fling her out of the driving car, or something equally dramatic and deadly. Or maybe rip her hand clean off. Instead, she twists it, palm up, and starts writing in it, wiping the palm clean after every letter.
It's sort of adorable, actually. Tony used to play this game when she was, what, 5?
Still, she pays attention and puts together letters like a good first grader. T. H. A. N. O. S.
So it's okay to write it out, but not to say it out loud? Doesn't writing have more power than sonic waves?
My hands don't contain magic right now, Stark, unlike my voice.
Your voice is magic? Seriously?
So many ways to turn that dirty.
So many.
She gets a sideways look as Loki drops her hand rudely. God of lies, Stark, try to keep up. Oh, okay. That. You can call me Tony, you know, since we're besties now. He is more powerful than anything I have ever seen. I know of no one that could successfully stand against him, especially not while he has the Chitauri at his beck and call. Involuntarily, Tony shivers. Partly because no one Loki knows includes Odin, who is supposedly the most powerful thing since, well, ever. But mostly because of the Chitauri. Because of that army that's still waiting somewhere out there. Tony didn't just see it. She felt it. And it felt wrong. That entire part of space felt twisted, upside down and inside out. It was like M.C. Escher meets LSD on a bad trip. Perverted somehow. But that implies that it was right at some point in time. And Tony does not believe that anything about that place was ever right. Euclid certainly never came by that piece of space. You saw it, Loki observes, far too calmly. You know. Tony exhales. Yes. The cab halts. Loki lives, or at least occasionally stays in, a studio apartment in a run-down part of town, with more square footage than you can shake a stick at. Tony doesn't for a moment believe that this is her only, or even her preferred, hideout. There are a living and sleeping area, and a kitchen. It looks like whoever installed the furniture had necessity at the forefront of their mind, rather than prettiness. It's functional, much like Tony's own spaces, with a few personal touches. Candles, mostly, and books. There are a lot of books. But that's all shunted off into one corner of the whole floor Loki occupies. The rest is, for lack of a better word, a lab. Nothing like what Tony would call a lab, of course. Too few computers, not enough cables, wires, and metal parts. But a lab, nonetheless. A magic lab. There are more books scattered about, all kinds of herbs and liquids in little glass bottles. There are metal parts upon closer inspection, and a computer set up in the far corner, but the whole thing still seems like something out of a movie. Too fucking weird. Am I right in assuming that you want us to work together to find a way to stop... Hey, can I say his name? Obviously. You do not have an ounce of magic in you, Stark. Somehow, that sounds like an insult. Okay, so, Thanos. We stop him. How? Obliteration. Loki calls over her shoulder as she starts pulling out things to make tea. What else? We have to find a way to utterly obliterate him. Scatter his atoms across the branches of Yggdrasil. Wow! You haven't got a major hate-on for this guy, do you? Loki's hands stop moving, and her gaze, even from across half the room, is searing, cold. He is in love with death. Opening her mouth to quip something about goths and emos, Tony gets cut off. I am being literal, Stark. He is in love with the physical manifestation of death, and she is not adverse to his advantage. Merely killing him will do nothing to stop him. I need to find a way to erase him from existence. Look at that! The French had it right all along. Death is actually female. Then the rest of that statement catches up with her, and something runs down Tony's spine, cold and scaly.
You're scared.
It's not a question. She can see it, hear it. There's a god standing across from her, and she's scared out of her fucking mind. Of course I am. Fear keeps you alive. I am not so stupid as to ignore something that could kill me. There is an implied, as should you, in there somewhere. Tony shrugs and kicks off her heels. This might take a few hours. Months. Possibly years. I've never known when to back the fuck off. And look where it has got you.
I'm still alive.
You're in a supervillain's lair.
That sounds ridiculous. And also, answer me this. If I were any more prone to fear, would I be here? Or would I have called Shield down on your head days ago? You be scared if it makes you smart. I've always thought best with my ass on fire.
For a long, long minute, Loki stares. Just stares, doesn't blink, doesn't move, doesn't even breathe. Just looks at Tony like she's stripping her to the bone, to the soul. Then she nods. You're right.
Wow, that must have cost her. Tony is magnanimous enough to just smirk and then strip out of her suit jacket, making her way over to the lab space barefoot. What have you got so far?
Loki appears next to her like, well, magic. Grabs a pile of notes.
Ugh, paper.
Out of a huge stack of them and hands them over. Tony expects her to say something, explain maybe, but all she gets is an expectant look.
Great. A test. Tony just loves those.
She shoves the rest of the stack down the long table and jumps onto it, feet dangling. She wishes she had gum to pop as she starts flicking through the sheets. At first, she can't make heads or tails of the notes, but there's a rhythm to the equations, a certain familiarity. Velocity, matter. Even if there are unfamiliar symbols scattered all over, the basic ideas behind them are still the same. Science.
And magic, she guesses.
Always with the magic. After a few minutes, though, she thinks she has enough of the patterns figured out to get the gist of what she's reading.
You're trying to, what, find a way to store energy long term?
I have absolutely no desire, Loki drawls, to be close when I wipe that creature out of existence.
Understandable. Help me out here? Tony orders, putting the papers down between them and digging a random pen out of the mess she made when she sat down.
She circles a few of the symbols in ballpoint.
What do those mean? Can't you figure it out?
Needling.
I could. It'd take a few hours, though. Stop playing games and help a girl out, will you?
For a moment, silence. Then suddenly Loki's laughing, head thrown back, full-blown belly laugh. It's unfair how much it turns Tony on.
What?
She snaps, a little defensively.
You.
Still laughing.
You just told me to stop playing games.
Pardon me for finding that utterly hilarious. Rolling her eyes, Tony waves the papers in the other woman's face.
Spit out that thesaurus, Shakespeare, and get a move on. At this rate, you'll pop your kid before we get anywhere.
Loki's hand flutters to her stomach, and that, more than anything else that's happened in the past few hours, strikes Tony as strange. She hasn't batted an eyelash at Loki switching genders. Figured the god won't turn back until the kid's born, but this? Hand over a pregnant stomach? It's so female. Or rather, so protective. It seems at odds with Loki's normal behavior. Maybe that's why the single movement makes Tony ache, fierce and low, and swallow back a sudden flood of something. They're on a deadline here. Well, she says, only half paying attention to what's leaving her mouth. Fuck. Loki snorts, somehow making even that sound unfairly elegant. Too much exposure to gods makes Tony feel like a troll. Good to know. Two hours later, Tony has chewed through the ballpoint pen she snagged, and Loki has worked her way through an entire pot of tea. Tony has the theory down, more or less. She thinks. Loki might just be smarter than her, even if she is never, ever, not on pain of death, going to admit it. Basically, you have the energy, but you lack a container. Preferably something you can fire at the guy and watch blow up from a safe distance. Right? Right. It's a sign of how far she's come in the past few years that Tony doesn't just lose herself in the excitement of creating, but actually thinks beforehand. Thinks about what she's about to do. She's about to help Loki, who tried to end the world only half a year ago, build a weapon. Not only that, but a weapon that marries technology to magic. Something that, if done right, and between the two of them you can be damn well sure it will be unstoppable, undefeatable, unopposable. A lot of uns. Worse than anything she has built in 20 years of being the merchant of death. And she'll give it to Loki. Promise me, she blurts, a bit too fast, too loud. Promise me that if I help you do this, you will never use it against Earth. Head cocked, Loki considers her for a moment, then asks, very blandly, you would take my word? A shrug. I'd take a signed contract, too, or, hey, do you have magical oaths or something? But, yeah, I'll take your word. Also, the whole avenge the world thing still totally goes, even if it is lame. You would have my word and threaten me in the same breath? She looks more amused than pissed, luckily. Smear on the pavement is not a good look on Tony, but neither is backing down, so she just sits there, waiting. Loki looks a bit disgruntled, probably at a loophole closing, but in the end she sighs. I give you my word that I will never use whatever weaponry you and I design together against this planet or its inhabitants. Melting into a puddle of relief would be undignified, so Tony settles for pulling her purse closer and laying her phone on the table between them. Jarvis, buddy, you here?
Miss Stark?
He answers. Loki blinks. Hook yourself into Loki's systems, will you? And any surveillance in a 5-block radius. And take the power grid, too, because we're going to be using juice. Pull up Doomsday and organize moving all related hardware here, ASAP. Anything else? She looks at Loki, but it's the AI that answers.
May I suggest monitoring SHIELD communications, as well as local law enforcement, in case you draw attention to your experimentation?
Do it, Tony agrees, and then really wishes she had enough hardware on herself to at least draw up a few holograms, but that'll have to wait. Instead, she moves toward the few computers Loki has. They all start beeping and blinking at her happily as she gets close. Can't trump Jarvis. Who is that? Sitting down, Tony waves a hand. Loki? Jarvis. Jarvis, Loki.
Pleased to meet you, ma'am. Or would you prefer I refer to you as Sir?
Since Loki makes no move to answer, Tony grins. He's my AI, artificial intelligence. I built him. He runs everything for me.
And he is...
Inside your phone?
It figures that the first thing to throw Loki about modern technology is the idea of global networking. Admittedly, though, Jarvis is sort of 5 steps up from that, and to the left. He's in everything I build. She says build instead of own, and lets that stand. Leaves it for Loki to either figure out or miss the obvious clue, the way everyone else always does. She goes back to watching the screens in front of her boot, flashing a welcome, Miss Stark, that makes Loki take a step closer, curious. Okay, Tony says, rubbing her hands together in glee. Let's get building. At 3 a.m, 13 hours after she went off-grid, Tony pulls Jarvis off all of Loki's systems and finds herself a cab that takes her halfway across town. From there, she calls her driver. Not Happy. Happy belongs to Pepper these days. They split friends and employees when they split the company, which means that Tony got Rhodey and Pep got Happy. It's a sucky deal, because Rhodey is never around and Happy is a great guy. But what can you do when your secretary turned technically boss, who also happens to be your best friend in all the world, decides that's how it'll go? To be fair, Pepper accepted 70% of the paperwork duties in the agreement, but Tony never did paperwork even when she should have, so... When the driver gets there, she pulls up the privacy partition and proceeds to mess herself up and then try to fix it. That's the trick in trying to look like you just got laid. Don't look like you just got laid. Look like you just got laid and then tried to hide it. Tony has been honing this technique since she was 15. Sometimes illicit love affairs are a great cover for the really insane things she gets up to. Although, she figures building weapons of mass destruction with a possibly clinically insane god of chaos is a new record, even for her. She knows how to pull the show off. She throws her hair around for a bit, then finger combs it into a messy bun that she fixates with a linty makeup brush from her purse. She hitches the skirt of her dress up around her waist, then shoves it back down, overdoes fixing her bra so her tits half spill out, and then puts on a new coat of lipstick. Steve or Thor won't put the clues together, but Natasha or Bruce or Clint definitely will, so she should be good. She'd rub out her cheeks, make herself look flushed, but she's still high from 12 hours spent with someone whose mind might just be the most brilliant puzzle she's ever got her hands on. She's flushed enough. And, as expected, the entire Avengers team is waiting for her on the common floor just below her private floor. She'd have gone straight up if she'd thought it would get her around the Inquisition, but she knows better. Up so late? She asks, blinking at Steve's puppy dog glower. The question is ridiculous, because between the six of them, they have the most fucked up sleep patterns the world has ever seen. Bruce and Steve barely sleep at all because they don't need it. Natasha and Clint can sleep hanging upside down from a ceiling if they have to, so they catnap at all hours but rarely ever sleep. Tony doesn't sleep at all if it can be avoided, and Thor... Well, she's not sure Thor sleeps at all. Ever. Do gods need sleep? Where were you? Steve. Tony rolls her eyes, followed closely by Clint and Natasha, who don't look like they give a rat's ass. Did I miss my curfew, Dad? You just disappeared! I didn't disappear. I texted you that I was going to be MIA for a while. Yes, 3 hours after you disappeared. I was busy. Yeah, she sounds real mature here, but she's getting a bit peeved. Steve means well, and he worries, but she's a grown woman who survived so far without anyone to hold her hand. She survived in a male-dominated, ass-backward industry of snobs and Yaleys. She survived Afghanistan without anyone to hold her hand. What the hell does he think New York can throw at her? And, okay,
So maybe she's technically actually doing something incredibly stupid, but fuck! She hates it when people get up in her business, questioning her decisions. Questioning her dedication or something. As if dedication is what Tony lacks. It's the objects of said dedication that are sketchy, never the dedication itself. With what? She could refuse to answer. She could say it nicely. She could. But as much as she adores Steve, he is not her fucking father. Booty call, she drawls, with a bit too much edge to it. Has your vocab caught up to that yet? Booty call means I found someone to fuck me stupid. Well, less intelligent at any rate. I don't think anyone could fuck me stupid, but you should have seen the dick on that guy. Now, that was impressive. I'd been home earlier, but I couldn't walk, and then we did it again, and... Tony! Steve is beet red, hands thrown in the air, backing away. Clint is full out laughing. Natasha and Bruce are making faces that say they want to be. And Coulson... Hey, where did Coulson come from? Isn't even twitching. Thor is roaring with laughter. At least someone is having fun. That was absolutely unnecessary, Tony. Trust, Cap, she snaps, spins on her heel and marches back into the elevator. She has simulations to run and a bottle of 30-year-old scotch to crack. As she stalks off, she pointedly ignores the little voice in her head, the one that sounds like Rhodey, telling her that he shouldn't trust her. Because she's in a figurative bed with the enemy. But the thing is, she doesn't think Loki is the enemy. Doesn't think this is a game. They both came to the same conclusion, separately, that they need each other for whatever is coming for them. Loki is knocked up and scared, and Tony is suicidal and angry. It's a good combination. Behind her, Clint says something about... That went well. You are never getting laid. Tony chooses to ignore it because she seriously does not want to know what her going MIA has to do with Steve getting laid. She shudders at the mental image that produces and quickly tucks it away under trauma I do not need. And keeps walking. The elevator is about to whoosh shut when Bruce slips inside, slinging an arm around her shoulders and pulling her close. Once the guy gets over the ridiculous idea that you should be scared of him, he turns surprisingly touchy-feely. She thinks that might just be touch deprivation, but what does she know? Bruce is her science bro, and he's also the best teddy bear in the entire world. They cuddle. She has no regrets. You didn't screw anyone, he says, as soon as the doors are fully closed, still holding her to his side. You sound very sure, she hedges, because she's not stupid enough to ask, how can you tell? This, he waves a hand at her face, is not your got-laid face. This is your got-creative face. Want to share with the class? She bites her lip. Okay, so, off-site project, she allows. It's huge, but give me a few weeks, okay? I'll let you in on it when it's time. For now, it's all just theory anyway. Bruce frowns, but he relents because he knows the value of secrecy, of having your own space. Why off-site? Potential for a big boom. Is it dangerous? Now there's a ridiculous question. Yes. Bruce hums, and she knows that he wants to ask more questions, but all he does is nudge her off the elevator. Movie? She hesitates, because she really wants to get into the lab, but she's actually kind of hungry, so... Let me grab something to eat and change out of this crap. Change. I'll get your food. Meet you in the den. Just like that. She watches him walk away for a moment, and then, on impulse, she skitters after him and wraps an arm around his neck from behind, pulls until he's turned around enough for her to press a quick kiss to his lips. I love you to the point of stupidity. Thought you should know. Because Bruce is, legit, the most awesome human being Tony has met in her life. He's all goodness and patience and smarts. And if she weren't absolutely sure she'd ruin him, she'd be all over him like white on rice. One of these days, she'll set him and Pep up, and they'll make her feel ugly and petty and inferior, and then they'll have gorgeous, perfect, kind babies, and Tony will ruin them all. He smiles at her idiotic expression, soft and amused, and yeah, she wants to snuggle him and feed him and build him bombs with his name written on the sides.
Oh god, are you two gonna fuck now? Because I can come back later?
Flint offers from somewhere behind them. Tony rolls her eyes at Bruce and lets him go.
Romance, bird boy, she says. Romance?
Of which Bruce and I have a truly epic one, which will not be ruined with sex. Because where there is sex, there is booze, and where there is booze, there is Tony Stark doing socially unacceptable things on tape, and then there's screaming and reporters and tears and possibly lawsuits, and it never ends well. So get over it already. Clint rolls his eyes right back.
Babe,
he draws, only because it sets her teeth on edge.
I know you like to think you're so butch, but even you can't pass for a bro. You've got the balls, but you lack the dick.
Bruce is trying hard to keep a straight face, the douche. He always stands by and watches when Clint and Tony go at it, like it's better than reality TV. Tony slaps her purse and jacket into his chest, trusting him to catch them as she lets go, reaches behind her and pulls down the zipper of her dress. A single, smooth and practiced movement has the fabric pooling at her heels, leaving her in a truly magnificent set of deep burgundy lace underwear.
Bruce eeps! Clint leers. Does this?
She asks, brushing a hand down her front, intentionally teasing.
Look very butch to you, Legolas? Looks sort of like porn,
Clint mutters, a bit glassy-eyed, and hell yeah, she's still got it. His eyes stick to her tits for a few seconds before focusing on the reactor.
Cyborg porn. And that could hurt in about a million ways if she would let it.
Instead, she smirks and bends, slowly, to step out of the dress and pick it up. She's flashing Bruce a whole lot of ass, and Clint practically all there is of her tits. But they both make noises, so it's all great. Then suddenly, she straightens, throws the dress over one shoulder, grabs her stuff back from Bruce, and cackles. The spell is broken. Clint sputters, and Bruce rubs a hand over his eyes.
Tony,
he whines.
Oh, put it in the spank bank, big guy,
she advises, patting him on the chest as she turns to get some clothes on. Clint looks like someone kicked him in the nuts. In a good way. Possibly.
Butch what?
She wins. She absolutely, definitely wins.
Doesn't mean she isn't evil enough to not put a little extra sway into her hips as she goes.
By the time Tony has taken a quick shower and changed into workshop clothes, the boys have taken over the living room, with Matrix on the big screen. That means Bruce won the fight. He's sprawled on the big couch, legs akimbo in ways he didn't allow himself a few months ago, and yeah, Tony is sort of proud of how far she's worn the guy down by generally being a handsy, fearless bitch. Clint is perched on an armchair. Literally. He sits on the back, knees up to his chin. She has no idea how he A, balances, and B, keeps the damn chair from tipping over backwards. But she guesses if everyone gets to have a superpower, that can be his. She sinks down next to Bruce, grabs the plate of sandwiches he put on the coffee table for her, and plasters herself to his side. Okay, so maybe he's not the only one who's a little touch-starved. Sue her. Her last stable relationship, 6 weeks trying desperately to be in love with her best friend, don't count, was Obi. Obi, who ruffled her hair and hugged her and put a hand on the small of her back to guide her, who patted her shoulder and squeezed her hand and sometimes let her climb him like a tree and make pretend. Obi, who paid terrorists to rip the heart out of her and then did it himself when they couldn't. She pushes herself into Bruce's side, a bit too hard at that, and he shifts, frowns down at her suddenly. Tony? Shellhead? Clint echoes, slipping down from his perch into the seat proper. Fine, she defends, waving a hand at them and shoving Obi back down in the box he belongs in, buried under several tons of issues and solid denial. And because they know her too well for that to work, she diverts, asks, why are you still here anyway? Don't you have a super-secret ninja agent to defile? Are you talking about Tasha or Phil? She cocks her eyebrow at him. Seriously? Everyone knows the three of you do kinky shit together. The bastard just smirks, while Bruce, the deer, chokes on nothing but air. Seriously, how did he not figure this out when Natasha and Clint brought Coulson home from medical and hovered over him like mother hens for an entire month? He had to send them on a mission in the freaking African jungle to get them to back off. But apparently he didn't, because he's going sort of blue in the face from trying not to cough like an idiot, and eyeballing Clint at the same time with a sort of, you broke my brain, look. Clint licks his lips once, ridiculously not sexy, and then pouts. Does that mean you want me to go? Are you kicking me out? I thought we had a thing here, seriously, but you're being mean now. Bruce, tell her she's being mean. You broke him, Tony points out. He hadn't caught on to the boss ninja triad of doom actually being, you know, a thing. I thought you made that up. Bruce defends. Technically, Clint stops, just long enough for Bruce to perk up, hope in his expression. You're the one that broke him. Bruce slumps. Tony pats him on the shoulder consolingly, congratulates herself on a diversion well executed, and asks, no, but seriously, why are you hanging with us when you've got six on legs waiting for you? Clint shakes his head, expression suddenly downcast and exaggeratedly hangdog. It's their taste in movies, he confesses quietly. It's horrible. I want to gouge my eyes out after 10 minutes. That bad? Last week we watched... He pauses for a dramatic, full-body shudder. The Dreamers! Bruce blinks. That wasn't bad. I liked Eva Green in that one. Tony snorts. Of course you do. She's naked a lot. She turns her attention to Clint, who's still laying it on thick. Aww, she coos. You poor mistreated baby. Do they make you watch movies where nothing blows up? He nods, lower lip jutting out. Was it existentialist? More nodding. Come here, she orders, and he practically throws himself at her, burying his face in her neck and shaking all over. He's also lying half on top of Bruce, who grunts and tries to shove him off. Tony smacks him in the arm. Don't hurt him! Can't you see he's suffering? They made him watch artsy movies, Bruce! No amount of hot threesome sex in the world can make up for artsy movies. Clint whimpers in agreement, and kindly curls his legs so he's off Bruce, and more or less fully in Tony's lap. For a long moment, the only sounds are his quiet whimpers and the soothing noises Tony makes as she strokes his hair. Bruce rubs his temple. You two are horrible people. More silence. Then Clint licks a long strip up Tony's neck, and she sort of loses it and dissolves into a giggling heap of idiocy and sleep deprivation and possibly leftover adrenaline from playing bombs with Loki all day. Clint joins her, and they turn into a puddle of hilarious goo on the couch, while Bruce watches with a deer-in-headlights expression, obviously torn between joining in and running the hell away. Tony closes her eyes, inhales, files this moment away deep, deep in her brain for rainy days. Then she blinks back into reality and starts poking Clint so he'll get off of her. He does, eventually, once he can breathe again, and plants his ass on her other side. Bruce reluctantly slips his arm back around her shoulders and starts rewinding the movie. They're all three grinning like idiots. This whole being part of a team thing? Turns out it's not so bad after all. A week after she makes her deal with Loki, Tony gets ambushed. By Pepper and goddamn Steve Rogers, of all people. She probably shouldn't have avoided him for the past few days, but damn, sicking Pep on her? Low fucking blow, especially since he just doesn't seem to be able to accept that they are not the besties he wants them to be. He's gorgeous and fantastic and good and pure and all things apple pie, yes, but he's also the icon Howard compared her to all her life. Her father missed Steve for the rest of his life after the capsule sank, and Tony and her mother might as well have been shadows in their own home. And Tony knows that every time the guy looks at her, he sees some weird combination of her father and his lost love. She remembers Aunt Peggy, even if only vaguely. She also remembers how people used to compliment Aunt Peggy on how much her daughter looked like her whenever they were out together. Dark hair, dark eyes, red lips. Tony at 38 looks like a copy of Peggy Carter during the war. Add to that her last name, and all Steve ever sees when he looks at her is memories. Tony spent a lot of her life chasing after ghosts and impossible things, trying to fill round holes with square pegs. She'd like to think she's learned at least a thing or two from that. Pep, she greets, as soon as she lays eyes on the two, waiting for her in front of the door leading to her workshop. Missed you. She hugs the redhead because since Pepper's taken over SI for good, they see far too little of each other, and when Tony doesn't try to make herself be in love with her, Pepper is her best friend. Has been for a very long time. Pepper hugs her back, and then tucks away her phone, giving her attention to Tony. Steve says you've been acting weird. Of course he has, Tony rolls her eyes. Yeah, well, Steve shoves his nose in places it shouldn't be, she answers, smiling sweetly at the man in question, as he scowls at her from where he's standing next to Pepper, sort of ignored. We're a team, Tony, and it's my duty to make sure everyone is on track. You've been acting strange for the past week. Keying open the door, Tony leads the way into the workshop. And if Jarvis almost closes the door on the good captain, well, she has nothing to do with that at all. Sure, she finally says, throwing herself into a chair. We're a team. But unlike you, we can't all spend our days lying around and moping. Some of us have companies to run, things to build, suits to repair, and a public to appease. Get a life, Cap. Maybe then you'll keep out of mine. Tony, Pepper says. And it's not a threat. Simply a reminder. Don't burn bridges you might still need. Rubbing at her temple, Tony sighs. Look, Pep, he's Mother Henning. I don't need a nanny. I have Jarvis for that.
Thank you for that, Miss Stark.
Jarvis pipes up from the speakers, and Steve jumps, which just goes to show how much the man is not compatible with her life. The second day after meeting him, Loki was having conversations with Jarvis. And comparing Steve to Loki is probably not something she should be doing. She closes her eyes. When she opens them, Pepper looks less worried and more bemused, figuring out that this is mostly just a case of personalities clashing. Tony is a 21st century woman, and Steve a man from the 40s. Even when he's not actively trying to throw himself on top of her to protect her from flying shrapnel, he's still looking out for her as if she needs it. It's annoying. And it's getting in the way of her clandestine foray into supervillainish behavior. Steve finally finds it in himself to say something semi-useful. I just worry about you, Tony. You've been out at all hours lately having affairs, and it's irregular. I'm sorry. I guess I'm still not used to how the world works now. Back in my day, you took a girl out before you took her home. Not back in your day, Cap. Steve shuffles his feet, looks away, sticks his hands in his pockets like a naughty schoolboy. Great. Now Tony feels like she kicked a puppy. A sad puppy. I get it, she allows. And thanks for worrying, I guess. But when I say it's good, you need to believe that it is, Steve. And don't go behind my back to bring in Pep again. She's got better things to do. Then babysit you? It's my purpose in life, Pepper throws in, and then waves a hand at Steve. Would you mind giving us a few minutes, Mr. Rogers? I'd like to speak with Tony. And then I have to get back to work. He blushes, mumbles something, and then politely gets the hell out. Tony resists the urge to throw a wrench after him. Barely. That man is a total himbo. Not everyone speaks fluid Stark, Tony. No, that's the problem. He does speak Stark. But it's the wrong Stark. It's Howard Stark, not Tony Stark. And I think I'm screwing up that metaphor. Am I screwing up your metaphor, Pep? I don't think there are any metaphors here, actually, Pep corrects, and then scoots her ass onto the work table and sort of tangles her legs with Tony's. You don't seem to get along very well, despite the way he looks at you. Himbo, Tony defends, consciously choosing to ignore that last bit. Because Steve and Thor are both sort of giant golden retrievers. Only Steve angsts more and doesn't have the whole Norse god thing going for him. For a moment, she thinks Pep is going to tell her off, but then the other woman just sighs. He still insists on calling me Miss Potts. I think you scare him, Tony confesses, for no reason she can discern. I think he has trouble letting go of everything he's ever known. And, yeah, sort of. It's understandable, but neither Tony nor Pepper are patient enough or good enough to put up with it for more than so long. They're 21st century women with perfectly manicured nails for claws and words for weapons, and they bit, scratched, and fought their way to where they are today. Chivalry didn't just die. It was women like them who killed it and danced on its grave. They're both quiet for a while, Tony fiddling with a tablet she pulled out of nowhere, Pepper checking her emails, her feet planted at the edge of Tony's chair. It's comfortable. Then, eventually, Pepper asks, "You're not dying, are you?" Tony flinches because, okay, yes, not her best week. In her defense, she was dying. Because Steve says you randomly disappear, and the last time you did that, you were dying, and you gave me your company, and I'm still trying to sort that mess out, so please don't start another. Aw, come on, when do I ever cause... Okay, no, I can't even say that with a straight face. I apologized for that, didn't I? Yes, you did. And you bought me some very nice shoes to make it up to me. And earrings. I did. Pepper hums. You did. They're sapphires. I look spectacular in sapphires. That you do. Do they match the shoes? Pepper taps her toes against Tony's thigh, drawing her attention to the pale salmon-colored shoes, all shiny and with an adorable ankle strap. "I'm still looking for an outfit that matches both," she adds, admiring the shoes.
"Huh. When you find it, charge it to my card, yeah?"
"I was planning on it." She smirks and stands, ruffling Tony's hair because it will make Tony squirm. Once she's tucked her skirt back into place, she straightens and asks, very politely, "Will that be all, Miss Stark?"
Tony grins and smacks her on the ass because she can, and it's revenge for the hair. Also, it doesn't count as sexual harassment anymore when the harassee is signing your paychecks. Or something.
"That will be all, Miss Potts."
Pepper jumps, laughs, and stalks off on deadly heels, stopping only once by the door to say, "Tony?"
"Mm-hmm?"
"Please don't do anything stupid, okay? It makes me ruin my makeup." Tony looks her dead in the eye and smiles, because it's as close to promising as she can get without saying the words. And she won't say the words because she hates breaking promises to Pepper. Runny makeup doesn't go with her complexion at all. Pepper waits for a moment, then nods.
"How likely is this to blow up in our faces and scar us horribly and forever?" Tony asks conversationally, pointing at the small cube sitting on the lab table between her and Loki. They've been working on it for the past week, designing a container in the perfect shape to hold magic, with a trigger set on a time delay. There are runes carved along the edges, containment and stability and whatever else Loki thought was necessary. Tony has heard more about runes in the last 2 days than she ever wanted to in her life. It's done now, the height of both their engineering abilities, and Loki is about to infuse it with magic to see if it'll hold. "Not very," Loki answers, tracing one edge with a single digit. "It won't kill us."
"Not what I was asking," Tony points out, and takes a few steps back. Then, on second thought, crosses the room to stand at the far wall. Magic. You never know what you get. You reach into the hat expecting a rabbit, and instead a rabid alligator clamps onto your hand. Or something. Loki is the alligator in this metaphor. The god closes her eyes, takes a deep breath, and starts doing something, because her fingers on the cube are slowly starting to glow bright green. Not scepter blue, which is reassuring. After a few moments, the runes pick up the glow, standing out in stark relief against the dark metal. Inside, under currents of electricity meant to contain the magic, Tony imagines a ball of power forming. Loki finally pulls her hand away from the prototype and presses the little button on the side that activates the countdown. A second later, she pops into existence next to Tony. A second after that, the toy makes a noise like a rubber duck's squeaker underwater, and the green light Loki just poured into the cube starts seeping out all over the place. The whole thing glows green, and sparks start coming off it, sizzling and dancing. A minute after that, the box gives a final and a shudder. And that's all she wrote. Not even an explosion. Just a quiet, soundless fizzing out. "That sort of makes me want to cry," Tony announces. "Because at least when things blow up, there's something to watch." And no, she didn't really expect their first attempt at this to work out, but damn, that display of failure was just sad. Small and pitiful and sad. "On the plus side," Loki announces as she sweeps across the lab to start disassembling their prototype, "you did not get disfigured by shrapnel." "There is that,"